All right. Hi, everyone. It's your host, Julia, back with another episode of the Ethical Consumer Podcast. Today, we are branching out of the food and beverage industry. We've done this before. We've done some public policy. We've done some public health. And we've also dove into cosmetics and skincare just a little bit with some of our previous guests, Ecolips, the original organic lip balm out of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And today, we have Pooja Ganeshan with Boonie Dune. And Pooja, I will let you tell everyone a little bit about this company that you have started. And you really have a lot of innovation behind the packaging and with the representation and just the whole delivery of your product. It's a really cool thing. I'm excited. Mine's on its way. As soon as you guys ship your pre-orders, I will have mine. I'm so very excited.
Oh, thank you, Julia. I'm so excited to be here. Yes, as you mentioned, my name is Pooja. I am the founder of Boonie Dune. We're a zero-waste skincare company based in New York City, and we launched last summer with our first product, which is our Calm Cleansing Capsules. It's encapsulated facial cleansing powder, and it recently sold out, so we had to do a restock, which was great, very overwhelming, but overwhelming in a really wonderful way. So we just finished our restock, and pre-order shipped out last week, so yes. I'm super excited for you to receive it.
Yay.
Let me know your thoughts.
Oh, I will for sure. I loved makeup. I still love makeup, but I tend to take a more minimal approach now, and skincare is my jam, and sustainable skincare, ethically manufactured and created skincare, and I just love it. I love trying new things, so I'm really excited to try it. And your delivery is so cool. We'll talk about it later. I just get really excited about it because I think it's such a cool thing. I'm doing this thing with my fingers. If you guys are watching this on YouTube or on Facebook, you're probably wondering, what is she doing? She's signing more in baby sign language. But no, I'm not. I'm pulling apart the magical container for it. So, Pooja, I will ask you the hardest question first, and I'll follow it up with the second hardest question. What is your favorite food? It's generally a food and beverage podcast.
My favorite food, this is such an easy question for me. It's almost like a no-brainer because my favorite food has always been sushi, and I am obsessed with sushi. In college, I studied abroad in Japan just because I knew I would love the food if I got there. So I love sushi. A spicy tuna hand roll is all I need. My last meal, honestly.
So, the second question, the spicy tuna sounds amazing. I'm actually allergic to shellfish, so I cannot have the crab sushi, but I do love the, what is it called? Is it sashimi? Is the generally the term for the fish instead of the shellfish. So yes, I do love the tuna, love the, what is it usually called? The ahi roll, something like that too. Ahi, I think is, yes. The tuna rolls and the varieties. Oh, that sounds good. Now I want sushi. I've not had sushi in a very long time, and that makes me very sad. So the second hardest question, what is your favorite skincare product besides your own?
So this is actually a really hard question just because, we've been doing product development for Boonie Dune for almost over a year now. So I'm constantly trying Boonie Dune products and formulations that are in development. And I have a ton of, other skincare founder friends. So I'm testing their products out as well. So I honestly can't remember the last time I purchased skincare in like the past year or so. But it's which is a good problem to have. But I would say that I love Black Girl sunscreen. It's pretty readily available across the country. It's a great sunscreen. It doesn't leave any white cast. It absorbs really well. So I'm a huge fan of that. That's something that I've been consistently buying.
Awesome. Black Girl sunscreen. So for those of you that are not watching this, Pooja is indeed a person of color as well. So as representation is extremely important in the brand on our podcast. And we'll talk about the inclusivity and kind of what's come up in the past year a little bit later on in our show here too. So do keep listening. But that is something that I think not a ton of brands until unfortunately a little more recently, as all of this, the lack of inclusivity in the skincare and cosmetic industry has come to light, which so many different types of sunscreen, whether it's mineral or chemical, it has to be thick enough to stay on. And especially when it's mineral and the minerals are typically lighter in color, that's an issue for those with a darker skin tone. So Black Girl sunscreen would be one of your recommendations for more color appropriate.
Absolutely. Very little white cast. So it really does absorb pretty well too.
Cool. Excellent. I will have to recommend that to a few of my friends, actually, because that has been the question. It always makes me so sad with size inclusivity and with product inclusivity. They're like, well, does it leave you a little bit white? And like, I'm pretty white. I'm even like a little pink white, especially after choking on my tea previously. So if it leaves a white cast on me, guys, that's not an okay thing. We need to recommend that. So, but yeah, I'm excited to chat with you a little bit later too. So you said you studied abroad in Japan, partially because of the sushi, but what were you studying? Did you always want to do cosmetic and skincare formulation, or is this like second life career?
This is definitely a second life career. I studied anthropology in college. I went into college being pre-med, so I was very interested in science. But I quickly realized pre-med wasn't for me, so I switched to anthropology. I really enjoyed some of my anthropology courses, and I found it very interesting to understand why people live the way they do or have lived the way they have. And I also studied environmental science in college. So when I graduated, I went into primarily the social sector. So I worked, in museums. I worked at the Tate Galleries in London for a couple of years. Mm. I worked as a nonprofit consultant for a couple of years. And then I went to business school and sort of took a sharp pivot to investment banking. So I moved to New York. I know. So I moved to New York City after business school. I moved to New York City where I was an investment banker. And that was probably, so far out of left field for me. I would have never expected myself to ever have that career, live that type of lifestyle. Creating Boonie Dune is sort of a mean reversion is what I like to call it. I've always been interested in sustainability, in social impact, and I sort of feel like Boonie Dune is bringing me closer to that core essence of myself.
I love that. When did you decide that you wanted to, well, let's start with the first question that maybe happened, or maybe it was in tandem. Did you decide to start Boonie Dune and then decide to veer away from investment banking? Or did you decide, I need something else, put in your 2 weeks and said, what am I going to do instead? What was the transition story?
It was sort of in tandem, actually, in the sense that, I was working really long hours in New York City. And the really only time I had for myself was a couple hours on Sunday where I do self-care rituals, right? Like, run myself a bath, put a face mask on, just take care of myself. And then one day, I just came home from traveling. I was, with a client for a couple of weeks. Then I come home and I go into my apartment and go into my bathroom, and it's just products everywhere. There's plastic everywhere. There's just so much stuff everywhere. And it's sort of an enlightenment moment in the sense that I wondered, who is this person? I've never really been, someone to hoard materials. And here I was hoarding skincare products.
Sure.
Just because this was like my lifeline at the end of a week. I just thought, let me make a small change. Let me just find, refillable, recyclable packaging, nothing that is packaged in plastic. And when I went online, of course, Googled zero waste, low waste skincare, I felt that the options on the market weren't appealing to the science nerd in me that wanted efficacy,
sure.
that wanted, innovation. All this innovation that's happened in skincare, I don't want to sacrifice that. I don't want to have to compromise on the results when choosing to be more sustainable. And so I had the idea that, what if I just created something? What there's a way to do this, and there's a way to do it right. And it just came to be that the idea kept, occupied more of my headspace that it ought to be, and I just, I am someone who needs to burn the boat in order to take the island, so I like to say. And I just couldn't do them both properly. So I decided just to jump right in and start Boonie Doon. I left my job at the end of 2019. I started Boonie Doon. And then the pandemic happened, so we were a little bit delayed in launching. But thankfully, everything turned out exactly the way I wanted it to. And we launched with our product, the Calm Cleansing Capsules, in July of 2020.
Okay. Wow. So you launched mid-pandemic, or I guess who knows what mid is we're still kind of in it right now, aren't we? So how did production look? Because clearly you wouldn't be able to go out and sample the product in person, really. So are you more e-commerce right now? Are you in any physical locations?
No, we're completely e-commerce, so we're direct to consumer. Okay. And that posed its own set of challenges in terms of how do we reach consumers? How do we get them to try the product? How do we explain even how to use the product if they're not there? They're not, you know, touching it in the store, seeing it in a demonstration. But, you know, I think that everyone sort of was at home and they were looking for new and exciting things to do. And so it was almost to our benefit to have launched something a little bit different during a pandemic because people were really willing to try it. I think that was the most surprising response is how open people were to trying something new.
Sure.
And I, you know, we initially thought that we'd launch in March. We shut everything down in March. So I'm based in New York City. I left New York City. I came down to Georgia to quarantine with my family. Our safety lab, we do extensive safety testing, was in New Jersey. They shut down. So everything was put on pause. And that actually allowed me to, you know, perfect the things that I otherwise would not have perfected. And such as the packaging, you know, we did acid etching for our frosted look. So, you know, there's no paint whatsoever. And really digging deep and understanding what the consumer wants. So in a way it was, there's a silver lining to that dark, stormy cloud.
Definitely. Let's talk a little bit. You mentioned your packaging is a little bit different. You got to refine that when you held off your launch a little bit. And then also, if you remember me going like this in the beginning, there's an interesting, delivery method. This doesn't come in a pump. It doesn't come in a jar. You're not pushing a bunch of powder into your hand and making a mess and not getting to use half of your product. Tell me about that innovation and how you came up with it.
So the innovation product development, I wish I could say that, you know, I was sleeping one day, I woke up and had the capsule popped in my mind. It didn't happen that way. Like our product was very iterative in nature. And I think that I definitely want to say that because, you know, I think oftentimes there's this narrative that happens that every single invention is an epiphany, and it's not for me, at least. It was very iterative in nature, and it took a lot of work and it took a lot of collaboration to get to what we launched with. So I initially wanted to do a very clean formulation. What clean meant to me is, you know, no sulfates that are in the cleanser that are conventionally found, as well as like really natural ingredients. And I didn't want to include any preservatives that could harm the skin or not biodegrade as readily. And the feedback I received from my formulator was that you really need to do an anhydrous formulation. So if you don't include any sort of preservative, that means you have to take the water out of it. And so I was like, okay, great, let's do that then. And then I shipped our powdered, you know, cleansing powder to our consumer, our test sort of test subjects, my friends and family essentially, and they were completely overwhelmed with the product. It was the constant like add powder, add more water, add more powder, add more water, and it just became a whole mess. So they came back and were like, I need to know exactly how much to use, like how much water, how much powder. I was like, okay, great. So we have to make this single use. And, you know, other cleansing powders on the market, cleansing powder is actually very common in Asia, East Asia. So in Korea and Japan, it's common to use rice powder or other types of facial cleansing powders. But it's not as common with the American consumer. And in Japan, especially the way that they have several single, you know, use capsules, I would say, but they're all made out of plastic. They're essentially plastic pods. And that is not at all what I wanted to do. So I started looking at what's on the market. Why reinvent the wheel if there's something out there that could do it? And, you know, vitamins came to play. And I knew that, so our capsule looks very similar to a vitamin, but in fact, it's much larger. So it's not much larger, but it's slightly larger. So it holds about 0.5 gram worth of powder. And it's actually vegan in the sense that the capsule itself, we didn't want to use gelatin or anything that traditional vitamins are made of. So we use tapioca starch. So it's derived from tapioca starch. It's called Pulalan. And it easily just dissolves in water. So, you know, after opening the capsule, pouring the powder out on your palm, you can just drop the capsule shells at the bottom of your sink or your shower, and it'll dissolve. So it was a really wonderful way to solve that pain point for the consumer.
That's awesome. I love how you detailed the entire process of, I wanted to do this. I didn't want to include the sulfates. I didn't want the preservatives in there. So then your formulator was like, well, okay, you can't include water. Because that automatically, that's an interesting thing as I've gone down my road of obsession and love of skincare has been the interesting awareness that bacteria is bred in water. Bacteria is not typically bred in oil, but if you don't have a liquid at all, then I mean, there's no possible way. Like oil can go rancid. Water can grow bacteria. Clearly there's going to be better shelf life and less chance of spoiling or expiring per se if you just don't have any liquid at all. Do your capsules have an expiration date?
So we have a suggested period after opening. So after opening the capsules themselves, like the jar of capsules, we say within 6 months, use them.
Okay.
There is about a month's supply. There's 35 capsules in a jar. So depending on how often you wash your face, we say it's about a month's supply. And so it's very easy to use our capsules. That being said, there isn't an expiration date just because it is pretty shelf stable. All of the ingredients are anhydrous to begin with. So it's not like we're dehydrating any part of it during the process. So it is, it's a very shelf stable product. And another benefit that came out of us actually encapsulating the powder that I didn't ever think of, and it's something that I definitely consider when we think about future products and development, is the fact that a huge part of the waste that occurs in the skincare industry is because a product just isn't a good fit for someone. So, you know, skincare is very personal. What your skin might react to is very personal. By encapsulating our cleansing powder, you know, for whatever reason, it doesn't work out for you, you could easily give that product to someone else because there's no contamination that occurs with the product. So, you know, rather than, you know, opening up a jar of cream, you dipping your fingers into it, reusing it, you can't really give that to someone else. I just wouldn't recommend doing that. So this is a great way to ensure that there's limited of product waste that happens.
And when you have the single use capsules, I have used cleansing grains or cleansing powder before from other companies, and I'm remembering the packaging that they came in. One of them was just like your really, really standard. You can get it at Ulta. It comes in a plastic bottle. They have now actually started getting some refill programs, which makes me a little bit happier. But still not as clean, not as awesome. And then I remember another brand that I used. It came in a glass jar. It had the plastic top. That's okay. We're not going to nitpick that much. It's at least got the glass jar instead of the plastic bottle. But you had to just kind of dump it out onto your hand. And keeping it in my bathroom, we're talking about water and oil and lack thereof, and it just gets a lot easier when water is not involved. However, the humidity of my bathroom, it started to make the open jar of powder kind of cake a little bit. It wasn't bad, but I did have to stick the end of like my makeup brush in there and like break it up after a little while because just the slightest bit of humidity got in there in that open surface jar, and it started to combine and kind of just pack down, and there's clay in it, I believe. So it started to make its little mud instead of staying in powder form. And I used it all, but it was kind of a pain in the butt, and I could see someone else who was not as concerned about making sure they used every little bit of product like I tried to do just tossing half the bottle, or like it's cakey, it won't come out of the jar, and then like throwing it away, which makes me sad to think about. So that's really an ingenious way, because if you do have the variability of the powder in maybe a humid bathroom, you're not going to have that issue. Everything is going to be single serving. You're not going to like dump out the entire bottle in your hand when you're like, come out.
And that's the beauty of it too. Like our capsules, like say for example, it's a very humid environment and the capsule shells are sticking to each other. Just break the capsule. Like it's
sure.
fairly easy to break it. And we haven't really had any issues with the capsule shells sticking to each other. But that being said, it's a very easy way to use the product. And even like in terms of people always ask, well, how much water should I use? And it's a personal preference. I tend to use, whatever you open the capsule, the bottom half of the shell, I just fill that up with water. So it's an equal part water to powder is nice. What I prefer. But if you wanted a little bit more watery, by all means, go add more water.
Could you, if someone wanted to add oil too, would they be able to add like a cleansing oil for extra exfoliation to it?
It would be challenging to use oil only because one of the ingredients is actually called rhamnolipids, and it's a biosurfactant that is derived from the fermentation of vegetable oil. It's a very cool process and it's very environmentally friendly. And in fact, I always say that it's the surfactant that's used in bioremediation. So, you know, it's very gentle enough to use on baby duckies. So it's very gentle to your skin. And, you know, we were one of the first U.S. companies in the personal care space to commercialize it. And I would say we worked very closely with a biotech company in San Diego to source that material. And once I read about it, I just knew I had to have it in our cleansing powder formulation. So I was super excited when they agreed to work with my small company. But because of that, it creates a foam. So it actually creates a very gentle foam. When you add oil to it, though, the almost like the surface tension isn't there to create the same type of foam. So you do need a little bit of water in order to create the foam.
So when you were talking in the beginning about you weren't really thrilled with some of the efficacy of some of the cleaner, environmentally friendly, plastic-free or waste-less products on the market, that's something that I have found too. Some of the natural products, they work. They work enough. They work okay. But some of them do not have the science background that I love from some of the more luxury skincare brands, having dove into the super crunchy, super granolas, like making my own stuff to like the high end. Like, I don't want to tell you how much I've spent on skincare before. We will talk about that later too. But the fact that all of this is so science-based and you've taken what could have been an extremely expensive, extremely not so friendly product and turn it into something very clean and amazing while still giving consumers, like you, I don't remember what word you had said, but the texture and the foaming that they want. That's the difficulty with some of the more natural cleansers. And I think why some people are maybe turned off from them, even if they do work well enough, is they want that familiar texture. They want that familiar foaming. They want the sulfates are what helps zhuzh up or foam up, you know, shampoo. So you get sulfate-free shampoo for the first time and you're thinking, well, I can't spread it throughout my hair. It's not foaming. It's not cleaning. It is. It just has a texture that you're not familiar with. So I would suppose the lipids or the peptides, that gives it that foamy, spreadable texture that so many people associate with like a face wash.
Absolutely. And I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, I, as a consumer, I'm coming at it, you know, I started Bunaduna because of my own consumer journey. So I'm coming at it as from a different perspective because I never understood why does a cleanser foam, do you need to have foam in order to cleanse your face? And the truth is you don't actually need to have foam to cleanse your face appropriately. But I love a foam. I don't feel like it's squeaky clean unless there's some sort of bubble involved.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, as a consumer, I don't want to. Skincare is not only personal, it's sensorial. It's meant to be very sensorial. The texture, the fragrance, the the way it feels on your skin. And you shouldn't have to compromise that in order to be more sustainable. So that's why I, you know, when I wanted to create a cleanser, I wanted to create a foaming cleanser. And then I go to my formulator, it's like, well, I want to create a foaming cleanser without any sulfates. And, you know, you get crazy looks because you're sort of talking crazy talk. And I think that's the biggest thing is that I wanted to do that. And I know you could do it. Like, I know you could create, you know, you don't need to have the surface tension in order to, get a surfactant. Surfactants don't need to be sulfates. So that was very important. And, you know, I'm very grateful that there are tons of partners that we worked with to make this product.
Yay. Did you have a kind of a journey of figuring out who you were going to work with? Or, I don't know, I don't suppose the first person that you got a hold of was the first company that you ended up working with. How picky were you when you were formulating and sourcing your ingredients and suppliers?
Very picky. And in fact, you know, even with our upcoming products, that we have a couple products in development, I was even more picky with them because at this point we had launched Boonie Dune. I understood that our messaging and our values resonated with the consumer. I was stricter in our standards at that point. So, for example, many labs, standard conventional skincare labs won't work with you if you're not using preservatives, because oftentimes they don't want to, introduce any sort of microbial growth or the potential for microbial growth in their manufacturing line.
Sure.
So, which makes complete sense, but it's a huge challenge to find, a lab that's willing to work with this company of our scale, like much smaller, B, a lab that's willing to work with a company that wants to use certain types of preservatives. And then in addition to that, our products are EWG verified, which is the Environmental Working Group. And as part of that process, we have to do a ton of disclosure, really, not just related to our ingredients, but also the concentration, the ways in which it's sourced, the, certificate analysis for each of these ingredients. So, for example, we include pretty natural ingredients in our formulations. But even something, one of our ingredients is colloidal oats. So it's a finely milled oat powder. You would think, what problem could any organization have with colloidal oats? It's so natural. It's just like, I can even make it at home. It's like oatmeal, right? No.
Not so much.
Not. Not so much. So, oats tend to be grown with pesticides, and those pesticides can contaminate the product. And, there's no real distinction in the oats that are grown for food versus the oats that are grown for skincare or, other types of, uses. So you run the risk that the oats that you use have been contaminated, or they have heavy metals in the water that's used to grow them. So those heavy metals remain in the product themselves. So we have to do extensive testing to ensure that our oats don't have heavy metals and are safe. And that's something that, it's an extra expense and extra time that it takes, but it's so important because as a consumer, that's something that I would want to be, addressed.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And I think people see the result when companies are more concerned about putting out an extremely, extremely, like, you kind of question why it's so affordable product. You can notice. I think you can. I think by coloration, I think by the amount of ingredients on the label that do things or don't do things, or active ingredients or inactive ingredients, as they're usually labeled. Like, what are the carriers in here? What are the fillers? What are the thickeners? What type of surfactant is being used? And is it indeed necessary, or does it have a safer, cleaner alternative, or could it just be excluded altogether? And I would consider, with the effort and the thought and the work that you've put into formulating your product and making sure it's as clean as it can be, as effective as it can be, and highlighting representation and affordability, do you find that you end up paying a premium for the ingredients, and how does that translate into the end price of the product?
Yes, I think that the biggest reason we pay a premium for our the ingredients that we source is not just because that they've been tested and they are ethically sourced or sustainably grown, but also because of our scale. So we're a smaller company, and then we don't have the economies of scale that come for, you know, if we were Unilever creating our Calm cleansing capsules, that's a whole different ball game than if we are Booty Dune creating the same product. So it operating on a smaller scale means you have to, you know, just eat the extra cost of ordering in smaller quantities, because that's what your manufacturing and your demand dictates. And I would say that the reason, and I've sort of switched personally, is that I start to look for indie beauty brands now, because I understand the tremendous amount of work it takes to bring a product to market. And just out of, you know, the greater appreciation I have now, I try to, you know, purchase from smaller brands and indie brands. That being said, oftentimes I feel like their price points are higher, and at least I can only speak for Booty Dune, but it really is because it takes so much more work to get it done when you don't have all those resources and those supplier relationships in-house already. So I think, and that's something that, you know, as we scale, I would love to pass those savings along to the consumer. I don't see any reason not to. You know, we still have our margin, we still have our profit. And I think it's great that, you know, if companies are able to pass those savings on, why not do it? I think that's the responsible thing to do.
Definitely. I'll go ahead and I'm not calling them out rudely, but I will mention, because they are such a big company, I don't think they're going to get offended with the host of the Ethical Consumer Podcast saying their name and being like, yo, do better, because maybe they could. But the cleansing grains that I had referred to earlier, one of the brands that I had used was Dermalogica, which is a very, they're just such a big, well-known company. It's just, this is what we're, you know, comparing to. Dermalogica comes in a plastic container. Thank you for, like, finally, they do have some refill options on their products, but they still come in plastic. I'm like, okay, good job, but, like, wait a sec. We're working on it. But this is a company that has been around for years. It has been used in spas. It is now, they now have their consumer line that is sold at Ulta. Like, how many Ultas are there in the U.S.? How many Dermalogica products do you think they sell? How well do you think this company is doing? I don't know. Maybe they're going to file from bankruptcy tomorrow and eat my words. But it's what I would consider a more luxury skincare line. And it still has kind of a high price point. It's a little bit more reasonable than some, but it's a little higher, but their packaging is a little bit problematic. I do not see good representation on their advertisements. Maybe they've changed that, hopefully, in the past year, as that has really been called to light and a lot more people are starting to call out businesses to show equal representation. And I don't know, it's the price point gets me, because their products, if I remember, I did look this up, their price is more expensive than yours, but all of what you're doing is at just a different tier, a different level than what they are. So why couldn't a bigger corporation do that? You know, it's a little frustrating. I understand it might take a little longer because they have scaled up and they are large, and it'll take longer to scale across the company, but you would assume they have the funds to do it. So is it the desire, or is it the trouble that you have to go to? Or, you know, it makes me a little sad, but I agree. Supporting indie brands that have already done that work or come out of the gate doing it right away. It's not like they have to backpedal, because they already did the good work. They're already doing good things.
I mean, I think that's exactly what I thought when I was a consumer. And I still am a consumer. It's not like I'm not anymore, but that's exactly where I would look. And I'm like, this is a huge brand. Why does this need to be packaged in plastic? Why aren't there refills available? Why, you know, all those questions. And, you know, candidly, I've never asked a brand that. I've never been a person to sort of DM a brand or send in an email and being like, are you planning on doing a glass version? And maybe if more people did that, they would come out with a more sustainably packaged version or more affordably priced version, but it doesn't exist. And there's no need for them to change either, right? Because their supply chain is set up, their product is out there. You know, if you change your packaging, sometimes you need to change the formulation itself to make it compatible. So why go through the process of reformulating? So it is challenging. I do appreciate that from their perspective, but at the same time, I think it's sort of lazy. I think it's lazy not to understand the crisis we're currently in and to react accordingly.
For sure. And just because I think we dove right into the capsules, because I get so excited about the capsules and I keep doing this with my fingernails. yours is, as you mentioned, a beautifully etched glass jar, and it comes with, is it a bamboo top? Is that right?
It's a bamboo lid, and it's, the reason it's bamboo is, again, you know, something that I didn't realize until I was doing it. I just thought, you know, I ordered all these samples, bamboo looks beautiful. And it came with a plastic liner in every single lid. So it looks bamboo from the outside, but the inside is really just plastic. And I was like, oh, just take it out. And every supplier was like, we can't just take it out. Like, the lid sort of has to go on to, as a thread to the jar. And it's easier just to, like, you know, make it out of, mold it out of plastic and glue it to the inside of a bamboo lid. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense, but I don't want the plastic. Like, right. I don't want any plastic in our packaging. So we went directly to a great family-owned factory in China. It took me forever to find a partner that would be willing to do that. And so we had our lids custom carved and shipped to the United States, and it was just so happy to see that you can actually take the plastic out of this.
Yeah.
And there's really no need for the plastic to be there in the first place.
And that's such a beautiful extra step that you could have been like, oh, it's good enough. When you go to recycle it, just pull out the plastic with a pair of needle nose pliers and put the plastic in the recycling bin and put your bamboo in your compost or wherever, however they're going to dispose of that. No, you did that for the consumer. They don't have to do a damn thing. You just have the bamboo lid. That's awesome.
Thank you. And it really, you know, to your point, it's about extended producer responsibility. Like, if I take responsibility for everything Boonie Doon does, you know, what does that look like? What do our products look like? How do we ship it to our consumer? What does the unboxing experience look like? All of those things matter, and I want to be able to take responsibility and sort of shift that burden away from the consumer, where sustainability has always been a problem for the consumer to solve, not for the companies.
Right. Totally. Actually, it's funny. I just got a t-shirt in the mail. This is from the company 4Days. I don't know if you've heard of them or if I think I've mentioned it in minisodes before. They have a, as I'm wearing it, I'll talk about it. They have a closed loop clothing line where you can actually send back your old 4Days items. Like, this is just a really simple olive or forest green t-shirt for those of you who aren't watching this and are just listening, but it's all organic cotton. You can send it back in their take back bag. They will even give you a credit for garments that you send back if you just decided you didn't like that color or you're done with the season. They don't encourage you to rotate it that much, but you know, you can also send back just any clothing brand, any composition, whether it's polyester, cotton, because the fashion industry is also fairly broken, like the cosmetic and skincare industry, where it's everything is left up to the consumer. So they've created this essentially a take back clothing recycling program where then they send it to be, you know, milled back down. So there's just raw fibers that folks can work with. So much fun. But yeah, yours doesn't even have to be a closed loop cycle because no one has to send anything back to you. It's a glass jar and it's a bamboo lid. Those are extremely easy things to recycle if you wanted to. Glass is a little bit difficult some places, but you don't even have to recycle your packaging, the initial packaging that it comes with, because you have refills as well. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes, we ship out refills and that's something that we want to incentivize people to use, right? Like, I think that for other brands I've seen, it's always been, okay, well, like, if you want to do a refill, here's 5% off. Well, like, the automatically as a consumer, you're thinking, oh, but it's only 5% cheaper. Why don't I just order the whole thing again? You know? So, because, you know, as a consumer, you want to get a bang for your buck, understandably so. So our product is priced at $38 for 35 capsules. Refills are $28, which is a substantial savings. Because I want to incentivize the consumer to actually purchase refills. And then, you know, it's just a plain, not plain, but it's a pretty package where it's just, you know, paper box with the capsules in there and they're shipped to you. And you open the box, you recycle everything, and you just refill your capsules. So it's pretty easy to use and very, very minimally packaged.
Definitely. And with the, I'm assuming with the less weight, because you're not shipping a glass jar, that is why some companies do choose plastic over glass, because glass is a little bit heavier. But sure, if every time you're getting a glass jar shipped because you want to avoid plastic, that's also higher cost for shipping and more emission, because more trucks that have to go out, more weight that's on the truck. You can't fit as much on the truck. And it's just, sometimes it doesn't feel like you can do anything right. But this is as close to as you can get, I think, because you don't have to ship the glass jar a second time. I'm assuming your package weighs, what, like, I don't know, the 8 ounces or something like that to ship the refills?
The refills are probably less than 8 ounces. Less than, yeah. And I think that's the other thing, because we are so conscientious of shipping too. Like, I think that oftentimes when we talk about living low waste or zero waste, there should be a motivation to shop locally. But many of these products, and I think this is why low waste and zero waste living is so intimidating for some people, is because they feel bad because they don't have these products readily available where they live. So we actually ship everything with our amazing shipping partner. It's a company based in Australia called Sendal, and they do carbon offsetting for all of our emissions related to the shipping. And we pay for shipping because, again, going back to extended producer responsibility, it is not, you know, people purchase our products. They don't need to purchase, you know, pay more for shipping just because we're not in their backyard.
Sure.
So I think that's, you know, as a company, we pay for our shipping and we completely offset it because we don't want to, you know, punish someone because they don't live close to us.
Sure. Well, so you have considered, with all of the things that we've just mentioned, even in the past 10 minutes, you really have taken all of the responsibility onto yourself to make sure that this is as clean, as carbon neutral, as effective as possible. And I am definitely one of those people, because I'm in Iowa. I do have an Ulta where I live. But, you know, that's like, we got an Ulta, we got a Target, it's not that bad. You know, I live in a big, small town, I like to say. It's 2 hours away from the capital. If I want to buy something more locally, I'll either order from 2 hours away at a sustainable, low-waste shop, or I can drive there when we go see my fiancé's parents. But I don't have a lot of bulk bins where I live. And there certainly isn't a whole lot of smaller boutique, clean, ethical skincare or makeup shops where I'm at. So I find myself in that battle of feeling guilty because I'm not always buying something locally. But the check boxes that I like to check off when I buy a product, I can't always buy those within driving distance. So I have to get things like this ordered. I would love if I could buy it closer to home, but the fact that you're shipping it, I don't have to pay for shipping, is magical. I do very much love free shipping. And that you're offsetting it too. And also that price point, $38 down to $28, that, I'm not the best at math, but like, that's almost a quarter. That's like a third and a quarter of a discount. Like, we're talking 23%, and that's a big deal. 5%, yeah, I might not blink an eye at that, but that's pretty significant. Now, with the inclusivity and the affordability, you wanted to make sure that most could afford your products. And of course, it is a little bit difficult when you are being as picky as you are with ingredients and with manufacturing and things like that, and going the extra mile of getting your lids made to make sure there's not plastic. Ethically manufactured goods do tend to be priced higher. However, sometimes, from what we discussed this previously, it's called the green tax. Other companies like to say, look how green my product is, look how sustainable, look at all of the good things I did, and then they have a really hefty price tag on it. And sustainability has to extend past the ingredients. It has to be like, can people actually afford this thing? And that's been important to you.
Very important, because again, as a consumer, when I went online, sure, I was making investment bankers. And also, like, I was making an investment banker's salary. I was living in New York City. And even I felt these products were so overpriced that were in the market. And I was like, if I feel that way with all of my disposable income, I can only imagine how many people are actually purchasing this product. And I think that was such an eye-opening thing for me, and especially when we launched during a pandemic. So, you know, as a company, you put together your COGS, like what it costs for you to make your product. You look at the landscape, what are other clean, you know, cleansers on the market priced at? What are they priced at per an ounce, per gram? And then you do a comparative analysis. See, are you in line with the market? And we were on the bottom end of the market, but still I was shocked to see, like, we're at the bottom end of the median. And I was just so shocked to see how many products were at the upper end of that. So, you know, how many cleansers that were, you know, for a month were priced at $60 or $70. And they were beautiful. They had amazing ingredients. They were, you know, packaged in glass. They were just really stunning products. But you beg the question, is it actually worth that? And, you know, what could I be doing with that money otherwise, right? And I think that, you know, when we launched our calm cleansing capsules, I sort of reevaluated what our products were being manufactured to be priced at. And we just, it wasn't in line. I started to have more and more feedback about our price point, even at $38 for 35 capsules, even with the refills. You're asking someone to pay essentially a dollar every time they wash their face, which is a lot. It's a lot of money. And especially if you wash your face multiple times a day, it really adds up. So I went back to the drawing board. I went to our R&D labs, our manufacturers, and said, you know, if I want to say that every product Booty June ever develops is under $45, is that something you could do? And some of them said, no, we cannot formulate and manufacture for that price point. So we cut ties and we moved on and we found new partners who are able to do that for us. So that's something that I want to do. And we sort of communicated to our community that all our products will be priced under $45 moving forward, just because that's important. Like, is it actually sustainable if no one is purchasing it? I don't know. It's like, is it, if a tree falls down in the forest, no one hears it.
That $45, I feel like that's such a good price point to set. And I'm sure some people would think $45 for a skincare or something like that, you know, but like, we are also dealing with like leveled up skincare as well. You're not going to go to Walmart or Target and buy this off of the shelf. It's also going to not be in the same packaging and have the same ingredients, all of that that we've just stated why this is in a tier above. But $45 is interesting because I feel like so many products, when I'm looking online, seems like there are quite a few companies that are right around that $45 mark. They're not as clean. The packaging isn't as efficiently disposed of or replaceable, refillable, or does not exist entirely. That $45, it seems like everywhere also has free shipping if you spend $50, and everything's priced at like $45 or $47. I'm like, you're going to make me buy another product just so I don't have to pay shipping. No, I'll pay my $7 shipping. I don't need another product. But man, that price point, it's a funny selling tactic. I don't know if they planned that out, but you're planning that out in reverse. Like, I'm going to pay for your shipping. We got you on the refill discount, and I do not want anything to cost over $45. Like, that's some good stuff.
Thank you. It's just so overwhelmed by the response of our community that now I feel like just the responsibility to them, you know, not to disappoint them, to live up to their standards, that this is all a result of that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that you've received so much good support and feedback, and then people want this as well, because I think, you know, maybe you start out, I've had other people come on the podcast and they say, I didn't know if people would want it. And then they went nuts. It's like, it takes one person with one idea, one point that they're dissatisfied with the current market. And they're like, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to do it this way, and this way. And I'm going to keep my standards. And it's amazing how many people do come out of the woodwork that you didn't even know were there that are like, yeah, I'll pay for that. That's worth it to me. That's excellent. Like, do that. Why aren't more people doing this? And I agree. It's just so wonderful. Such a wonderful thing to see.
People always ask me like, oh, when do you like, you know, when did you really know that Booty Jean was like, I don't even think I ever realized like, you know, when we sold out of our first run of our product, I was so happy. But the level of joy I experienced when some random person placed an order for the first time on my website, there's no greater joy in the world. Cause then it really hit me like, this is not my family. This is not my friend. You know, this is someone who just saw my product and was like, oh, I'm going to buy that. This looks cool. And that's really when I start to feel like the responsibility of being the founder of Booty Jean, and continuing to like develop products that meet our standards.
Sure, most definitely. And I love that you say responsibility, that you feel like you have this responsibility and you don't take that responsibility lightly. In the past year or so, starting unfortunately just about 11 months ago, with the death of George Floyd, which is coming up on the anniversary here in about a month, this is kind of when all of the lack of representation and lack of responsibility in companies not taking responsibility for anything that they do or do not do kind of started to come to light. And we chatted about this before the pull up or shut up movement, where makeup companies, skincare companies, people were calling them out publicly, much more harshly than me just mentioning Dermalogica as their packaging and they could probably do better. I don't know if they were called out as a part of that. No, I want to check it out. Sorry, Dermalogica. people were getting a hold of these companies. Like you said, I've never challenged a company or said, hey, why don't you do this differently? Why can't you do this? There was a real big stir and a very necessary one about that lack of representation as far as models go and price point and not having any people of color on boards or in any decision making or swaying type of status. As a person of color in that market, how do you think the past year has gone? Do you think that companies have started to pull up and change? Or I don't know. Do you sometimes things like greenwashing or the green tax and showing up with words and not actions is an issue? What is your take on that, having worked with suppliers and other companies and just seeing other companies and how they operate?
I think, yeah, I mean, that is such a important movement, especially within like the clean green beauty space, because I think it's traditionally been very white, very, you know, wealthy white women have really been the target market. And as a result, you know, most founders have their own consumer journey that's led them to found their own company. And so the many founders in the space too tend to be, you know, either, you know, white, wealthy, white men, white, you know, like either women or men who are wealthy and white and were consumers and then decide to become brand founders. I would say because of that, it's hard to incorporate something that you don't live and that you don't experience yourself. And it's not me criticizing them as much as understanding, like even personally, like, with all of the recent Stop Asian Hate, I have a ton of Asian friends, and you know, and I'm Asian, but I am not East Asian, which is, you know, primarily where most of the recent assaults have been taking place against the community. So I understand that it's really hard to understand, and you don't feel you want to be performative in what you're doing either. So I understand how it could be really challenging to step up and hold yourself accountable, you know, reach out to people without tokenizing them. And it I think the biggest thing is that you just have to open up. Yeah, I just, exactly. That's something that you don't also want to do. And I think the biggest thing is that you just want to invite more people into your life who come from a different background and look different and have different experiences from you. And I think that's why Pull Up or Shut Up came to play, is because if you're not inviting these people into these spaces, you run the risk of never hearing those voices in your world, really. I would also add, though, before you invite people, like, for example, I am a woman of color. Prior to starting Benedine, I worked in banking, predominantly male-oriented, predominantly white male-oriented. That being said, I am of Indian descent. No one has ever doubted whether I have the intellectual or educational qualifications to sit in that room. They might doubt whether I should be taking notes or not because I'm the secretary role. That's very easy for women to play. But my intellect itself was never doubted. I know that's not the case for every single race, right? That's not the case for every woman of color, or every, you know, person of color. So I think that before you invite people who have not historically been invited to the table, you have to make sure the room has done the work to make them feel welcome. Because the last thing you want to do is hire someone and then make them feel so isolated or make them feel even undervalued. So I don't have a perfect response to this, obviously. I don't have, you know, an answer at all. I just think that it's really important to do the work yourself, and make that your sort of mission is to improve the quality of your work, the people that you invite to the table, and making sure that they feel heard and welcomed and comfortable.
That is such a beautiful response. And I think from my end, that is a perfect response, because it's true. You have to make sure that you are not only inviting people to the table, but also make sure they feel welcome, not using that tokenization or performative activism. That's a term that's been coined and thrown around a lot in the past year or so. I'm so thankful that people are becoming more aware. And even as a white woman, you know, I've challenged that, my own understanding of the world, in the past year. You said that beautifully. People just have to understand, it's not exactly how you said it, but that someone else's experience could be different than their own. That is so true and so beautiful and so necessary to just understand that. Start with that.
Yes. And I think that's the hardest thing, is because we've all been raised to live in, like, you know, live in the truth, right? But sure. The truth isn't absolute. You know, you can go into a room and think, oh, wow, that store was so welcoming. Those salespeople are amazing. I can go into that same store and be like, oh my gosh, I felt so uncomfortable. Oh. And that could be the truth for both of us.
Sure.
You know? And it doesn't mean that it doesn't invalidate your own experiences, is what I'm trying to say.
Like skincare, you can have a product and someone has oily skin and someone has dry skin, and they use this product and they use this product and they decide this is a terrible product, and the other person says this is perfect. We're all gonna have different skin and we're all gonna come from different backgrounds. What an example, Julia. Good job. Oh goodness gracious. But yeah, thank you so much for just being so willing and so open to come on and talk about Benedine. I've loved having you. This has been a wonderful conversation.
I have loved chatting with you. This has been such a treat for me. It really has.
Do you have any other recommendations, whether it be advice for consumers on just picking your brands and your products in the best way possible? Any recommendations for entrepreneurs or businesses? We kind of just touched on that with just making sure people are invited, welcomed, included, and accepted. And supported, all of the things. Anything else you'd like to share or add?
You know, I think that my biggest, you know, as part of Benedine, we launched our product. We created this community around our product. And one of my missions now is not just to launch products that are effective and, you know, are sustainable, but also change the way we think about sustainability as a whole. I think that, you know, even as growing up in Delaware, you know, people who were I would say more sustainably focused tend to be a little bit more country granola. That's no longer the case, right? Like, sustainability is sexy, it's cool, it's important. So one of the things that at Boonie Dune we've been trying to do is just talk about imperfectly sustainable, how sustainability can be incorporated in smaller ways. And it's not, it's almost like, I don't know, I always joke around, it's almost like dieting, right? Just because you have an off day.
Sure.
not to promote diet culture at all, but it's almost like that. We're just, because, you know, it's moderation. It's what, you know, doing what makes sense for your lifestyle and for your life. And with your resources, it's just trying your best and realizing you're not going to be perfect, and no one's going to be able to, not everyone, I should say, not everyone's going to be able to fit all of their plastic trash into a tiny little jar and live that way.
It's, yes.
Just try your best. That's the only
wish.
Thing. That's
my, I know. Man, if I tried to aspire to the plastic jar, kudos to anyone who is doing that. And one of our previous guests, Olivia for the Ocean, documents her plastic-free lifestyle, and she takes it year by year. Recently, she posted a picture of her March trash from 2020 compared to her March trash compared to 2021. And this is a beautiful woman that has her blog. She has built a lifestyle blog, a social media presence around being plastic-free, and she is still being incredibly honest and posting pictures of, like, plastic lined butcher paper that she can unfortunately not recycle, but that is the best she can do. And milk caps that she must have switched her milk brand, because she used to have all these milk caps in there and now the milk caps are gone, but there was still a cap from the hot sauce bottle, you know, like,
yeah.
Her honesty is so beautiful. I love it so much. And yeah, we do what we can day by day. That's for sure.
We do what we can in a world that is set up to, you know, the plastic is the backbone of our world as it is right now. Mm. So even doing tiny things, even the fact that she's able to find, you know, hot sauce that's in a in a glass jar versus a plastic jar, that's, you know, kudos to her. That's really impressive. And I feel like we should all just try our best.
Definitely. I love that. Well, guys, thanks so much again. This has been Pooja Ganeshan with Boonie Dune. You are the founder of Boonie Dune, and you are the personality behind it a lot. It wasn't until recently that you actually hired a social media specialist as well. You were doing yes. all of the things.
Yes, and it's pretty much a one-woman show, but I love that. I love being able to just, like, have a very direct line of communication with their community and seeing what they respond to and the comments and DMs.
I love it. And you are shipping again. Mine's in the mail. I'm excited. I remember when you said Sendal. I did not yet get my tracking number, but I got my it's on its way notification. So by the time this episode airs, I should have it, and I will let you guys know. I'll take you through my awkward pulling motion. This is me clearly opening the tapioca starch capsule. And folks can find you at booniedoon.com, booniedoon.com. That's also your Instagram handle. And real quick, before we sign off, there's an interesting story behind the name. Where did you get the name Boonie Dune?
Boonie Dune is just a silly nickname I have for my sister. We actually call each other that. And I was thinking about starting, you know, the company, and, you know, I think naming your company is, like, one of the biggest things ever. I'm sure you felt the same way when you named your podcast, where it's like, what's the perfect name for it? And I just wanted something that meant nothing. So Boonie doesn't have any meaning, but it means something to me personally. It's just, it reminds me of my family and my sister. So I'm super excited that I went with that. I'm happy with my choice.
I love that. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, listeners, for tuning in every episode. You can find more information at Boonie Dune for Instagram, also at the.ethical.consumer. Both of us are on TikTok. Your social media manager is also on TikTok now. You can go find us, awkward millennials trying to join the TikTok crowd. I think we're doing okay.
So. I definitely feel it's a learning curve. I'm glad that we're over the phase of TikTok dances. I would never have been able to do that.
No. I can point at words on a screen, but I draw the line at TikTok dances. We're probably not going to do that. Thank you so much, Pooja, and thank you, listeners. We will see you next time.